The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Podcast Beyond, IGN's number one PlayStation podcast. I am your host, Mark Medina, and I'm joined by John Davison.
Hello, how you doing?
Jada Griffin.
Hello, everybody.
And Brian Altano.
Beyond.
Nice.
I love it. I
there
love
we go.
The energy. You know, I woke up yesterday, and I thought the same thing I wake up, same thought I have every time I wake up, which is, how could this day get any worse? And then they announced a Nintendo Direct, and I thought, okay, this could be cool, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
And then they announced a State of Play, and I'm like, it better be good. And it was pretty good.
It was pretty good.
It was pretty good. Yeah.
Pretty, some wonderful surprises, some stuff that I think we knew about already, and some stuff I was like, please stop showing me this because I'm already sold on this game.
Yeah.
I'm in.
So let's start with that. Obviously, the big, you know, one more thing was a controller, which was not a Mark Medina controller. John, what about you?
I'm not into the game-specific controllers so much. So no, not for me. But there's a lot more of God of War than I wanted to see right now.
Exactly.
Hold on, you're all telling me you don't like the idea of like tribal art of two wolves kissing on your DualSense.
That's
controller?
Not what it looks like. It looks like a company logo.
Well, you know, I mean, I have that tattooed on my butt. and I'm a little upset that there's a controller with it now.
They didn't talk to you about it.
Got to get those things trademarked.
So every time they show God of War, I think to myself, like, I don't want to see more of this game. And I've never been more in that state of mind with this trailer.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. We were just like kind of like in the room being like, okay, I'm sold. Like, I cannot wait for this game. This is my most anticipated game this fall. Most anticipated PlayStation game of the year. Yeah. I don't need to see another second of it. The first game was incredible. I cried at the end.
Yep.
I want to do that again. Save everything. Like, I know these characters. I know this world. I know how the combat's going to feel. Stop showing me all this crazy, awesome, high fantasy stuff and bosses I've never seen before and environments. Just stop. Yeah, I'm sold. I'm in. I can't wait.
I was good when they started. I was like, okay, we're seeing some gameplay and stuff. And then it was like, hey, we're going to do just a montage of spoilers at the end. And I'm like, no, like, stop showing us this stuff.
Here's the spoiler, Mark. That all happens in the first 5 hours of the game.
Okay.
That's fine.
The first 5 hours of the game. That's all we get. No, I think it was great. I was right there with you, though. Like, it was great for the first bit until I got to, like, the sled part, which we've seen.
Yep.
And then I was like, okay, cut it there. And then they kept going and going and going.
Who are these like undecided voters that haven't figured out that God of War is awesome?
Who needed to see that mermaid to be like, okay, now I'm in?
I mean, like, play the first game. It's like it was, you know, like, just go play that, and if that doesn't convince you that you need more of it, then you're good to go.
The first game is just marketing for Ragnarok. What's your hype level, John, on Ragnarok?
Like, there's nothing more this year. And I mean, having seen this, I mean, now I know there's a giant jellyfish in it.
Yeah.
And, and he appears to be cutting someone's hair.
Sure.
And, it's been a while since I played it. I know you've been playing it recently. Mm-hmm. Was the two of them teaming up on attacks in the original game or not?
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
That was in there.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
Because when he did the thing, and then when he threw the guy out of what looked like a window of something that was flying or whatever, that kind of looked like it was new.
Yeah.
Feels like it's going to be a lot more like empowered in this game. There's going to be a lot more instances of it. I feel like it was very more limited to Atreus with just a few arrows, and you would command, and sometimes he would grab people from behind.
Whereas this, it looked looks like them passing moves back and forwards to each other.
Yeah, the little double dragon team tag action. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The first God of War felt like a prototype for what the Guardians of the Galaxy game ended up being, but then the Guardians of the Galaxy game was like a little too much because you're controlling everybody, and it looks. I'm actually kind of excited to just come back and just be like telling my son what to do.
We saw some what I believe are Valkyrie fights in this game. Mm-hmm. They look amazing. Yeah, they like the giant bosses and some all these cool monsters. I want to find the monsters. Monsters are a nice surprise in video games for me. Mm-hmm. I'm a giant horror fan. I like to turn a corner, see a wretched beast, and then kick the crap out of it. So
that scene that was just there where he like. Strangles the guy with his own tongue and then throws him out of the window.
Yeah.
Actually, after we just said that, you know, it was spoiling it for us, we're showing it again.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I mean, hey, we got a show to do.
I think the big thing for me that was the most exciting for me was when he grapples and goes straight into a combo.
Yeah.
Like, that is so cool because, like, there's so many times in these action games where it's like, okay, you can traverse and then land and start your combo, or you just a combo. You don't usually get to blend those two as fluidly as it looks.
No,
there.
Totally. And can we pour one out for that blood smoke monster that was born with like a weak spot rune on its head?
Sure.
Like, it's
just they're always born with a weak spot. I love this part too. Oh, when Atreus unlocks his fire arrow, Ocarina of
Time. This is Lake Hyla. This is where they're at.
Like he turned it from day to night during that. Like it's incredibly cool. Again, completely 100,000,000% in on this game. It looks stunning. The more we see of it, the more I love the like vibrant color, high fantasy, almost like vintage heavy metal style look they're giving to it, and not like the music genre, like the old old comic book animation stuff. I love that. Like, I feel like the recent Thor movies dipped into that a little bit, and they're doing it here. But it's also gritty as hell, and I almost said grounded. I don't want to know if you want to call a game like this grounded, but what I loved about Kratos
completely
in the last
realistic.
One, this all happened was just how heavy the combat felt, and I'm excited to bring that back.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what to say. It's like, I know that like when it comes to marketing, they have to show this game, right? Like, not everyone's as in tuned in as we are, as like always just being like, we're good. You know, somebody's got their PS5 and they're looking for their big fall game, and they're like, cool, God of War. But like, part of me is like, it's always like the downside of like having to cover these shows. It's like, I don't want to watch these.
We did
it's
the show a couple months ago as after the State of Play, and we talked about how what we kind of predicted for around this month right now, this era specifically, was that we would get like a God of War focused State of Play.
Right.
And we didn't.
Yeah.
We just got God of War as a treat at the end of a State of Play that we were going to watch anyway, and they just spoiled a bunch of stuff for us.
Well,
it's okay.
The biggest question is okay, so for one is we got a State of Play halfway through September. Is this the showcase? Are we not getting a showcase? Or do you think, I feel like that State of Play for God of War is still coming.
You think so?
I don't think
this is it.
It would be, I don't know. It's like they did one for Horizon. They did one for Ghost of Tsushima. It seems like that's just kind of their trend. So I would love for this to be it, but the game still has.
I don't think we're going to get a God of War. We might get some teasers of things that are coming next year. There's a lot getting slammed into Q1 next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think there might be, here's what's next. What I think's interesting about this one is we're finally getting to a point where just about every game in that presentation actually looked like what we thought next gen games were going to look
right.
Like the God of War, so much more impressive than everything else, but now it's starting to deliver on the promise that like I feel like we've been waiting 2 years to really see what the PS5 can do, and like now we're getting more than a glimpse of it.
And can we pour one out for the base PS4s that have to run that game?
I know that's
going to hurt.
Looks awesome, and it's still a. Your PS4 Slim is going to be able to play that game.
I know that console is like 14 years old at this point. It's just going to be like it's going to be chugging. But
speaking of games that like. I don't know. I thought it looked really, really awesome. Rise of the Ronin. Ninja. I was like, I'm sitting here watching the trailer and I'm thinking, don't compare it to Ghost of Tsushima. Don't compare it to Ghost of Tsushima. And then they just made it look very Ghost of Tsushima-like.
Put yourself in Team Ninja's position, right?
Yeah.
They basically invented the rock-hard kind of like 3D combat game.
Yeah.
And they practically invented the genre of like badass like Asian heroes. And it got stolen away from them by all these other games. To me, this feels like them reclaiming their territory.
Well, and that's kind of my thing. It's like this game is going to be I'm like, it looks really, really cool. It looks very pretty. The combat looks really fun. I hate that games sometimes have to live in the shadow of other games, but I don't know. I'm sold. I think it looks really cool.
There was something about the combat in this game that like immediately struck me as just incredibly cool. The camera pulling back behind the player, like John was saying, like this is a studio that's been they've mastered this craft before anybody else even attempted it. Plus, there's some like really interesting stuff going on in terms of traversal. You got that glider. There was an American flag at the beginning of this, kind of like tucked down an alley, and so I wonder if. Like you're going to get into some sort of like kind of feudal, like us versus them type thing, where, you know, them is the US basically.
Yeah.
And you're reclaiming areas and environments and streets and stuff like that. But yeah, the combat looks awesome. This is a PlayStation 5 exclusive. So
console exclusive.
Console exclusive.
Yeah.
That's right.
Jada, what about you?
Yeah, no,
looks like a Jada game.
It definitely is a Jada game. The over-the-top action that looks like it's going to be very like twitch reflexes for those combos and counters. The little flying kunai throw, like kunai on a chain throw and whip into somebody from that bridge in that scene. Like that, yeah, this game is definitely up there on my list for whenever we're going to get it next year. I think they said 2023 or did they just show it? I don't remember if they gave it.
Everything they showed said 2023, right?
Yeah, everything. Yeah. God of War, obviously.
Except for God of War.
God of War.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, this one's definitely up there on my list. I was a huge Ghost of Tsushima fan. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about the Platinum Trophy for it last week on Beyond. And so like this one is just, it's just ready to be added to the collection when it drops.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Jada games.
Yes.
I'm not going to give you Tekken yet.
Okay.
I know you want it.
I definitely
but that's not
it.
What we're getting.
All right.
Let's talk about Like a Dragon, Isshin, which is, you know, all your favorite Yakuza characters you know and love, just in feudal Japan.
Great.
Yeah.
Sure. Awesome.
Time traveling Yakuzas. I love it. Like, let's do it. Like, just.
Like, what are your thoughts on, like, what is this? I am so, like, out of the Yakuza loop.
Well, conceptually, this feels like the way, like, they treat Mario characters, where they're like, it's a stage play, and they can show up wherever they want, you know?
No
like,
rules.
So I like that, like, just taking characters and themes, and even story beats that you recognize from Yakuza games and dropping them in a completely different era is super creative. Like, I mean, this is a series that there's been, what, 7-8 of them now, spinoffs and stuff like that, and then you get the Judgment games. Like, I'm totally cool with this studio going, hey, let's do something completely different. Like, especially if it's just the same four streets as every Yakuza game.
I mean, when I heard they were doing another, I thought they were going to lean into the humor again,
right?
Like a Dragon, but it's pretty clear that's not the case.
Yeah. Yeah, this is hyper-violent, which is fun as hell.
I mean, and I think it's really important for these studios to be able to stretch their legs and do different things like this so that their games don't become stale over time. We've seen that with other franchises where they're forced to release the same game time after time, sequel after sequel, and we get tired of them. Yeah. I'm sure they get tired of looking at the same assets and building upon just building upon the same thing. They're like, let's do something completely new, and this is what it is. So this is their chance to do that. So I'm excited to see what they do with this.
I feel like Sega's got the hang of how to talk about this as well. Remember when the original Yakuza came out?
Right.
They were trying to position it against Grand Theft Auto as much as anything else. Right? And it was kind of like, so this is our edgy gang thing, and it's a bit like a role-playing game, but it's kind of like GTA. And now they've been like, no, we know exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Like, it's, and we can do whatever we want with it.
Now they're like, it's sexy River City Ransom. Enjoy. Yeah.
And then, you know, the first game they showed, something John called immediately, was Tekken. But we're not going to talk about that yet. We're going to talk about the game that... So we have those games, Deathloop and Forspoken, that they just seem like they show up at everything.
Right.
And that's becoming Hogwarts Legacy.
Right.
Hogwarts Legacy, for better or worse, just won't go away. But we got a spooky trailer and a PlayStation exclusive quest.
Cold.
Did you write out what it's called? Hogsmeade
something?
Something. Haunted, they showed it for like a second.
Haunted Hogsmeade or something?
Yeah, yeah. I think that was it. Who's excited for Hogwarts Legacy?
I've never been in a Every time we post anything about this game, it goes nuts.
Yeah.
And like when we did the, we put all of the house, you know, the houses, common rooms up on social media last week and all of them got a gajillion views. Mm-hmm. People are super excited about
it. Part of me wants to play it just for the hype, but like I read the first four books and like that was it. I think I saw the first movie and the fifth movie. So... You know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Tekken.
Yeah.
Started with Tekken. The second it started, John was like, is this Tekken?
I don't even think it was a quarter of a second. John was like, Tekken.
It was the G on the thing for the G Corporation that made me think. However, I will admit that we'd sort of heard that Namco Bandai was going to show something big at this event. Right. With no hint of what it was, and it was sort of like, well, it's probably Tekken then, right? Mm-hmm. So on the car ride over here, I did spend some time reminding myself.
You looked up spoilers?
Well, no, I looked up. I've played all of the Tekkens over the years, and have absolutely no memory of what the story actually is.
Right.
Because it gets a little complicated.
Yeah.
Because there's people with very similar names, with like the devil thing in them, and then there's the whole ogre thing, and then it gets into genetics and warring corporations, and Heihachi's dead, and then he isn't, and then he is again, and this is like basically father and son beating the crap out of each other.
This is the most accurate retelling of Tekken lore that I have ever heard.
I zoned out and I thought he was talking about Game of Thrones, House of Dragon, because it also applies to that.
You know, it's basically three generations of one family who decide that the ownership of this huge multinational conglomerate that they've created is probably best managed by setting up a tournament where people beat the crap out of each other.
Yeah.
That's the best way to decide who the CEO of your company should be. Yep.
Trial by combat.
John, does IGN have plans for?
I think when it's time for me to move on, mm-hmm. I think what we should do for whoever's gonna be publisher next. I think you should fight for it.
That's actually how John got here. He fought me.
I had to kill the
kicked my butt.
Jada, you mentioned that like fighting game fans are eating good right now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Guilty Gear just released a new season, announced a new season with new characters. We got Street Fighter VI on the way, and now Tekken 8 we know is on the way. There's probably two other fighting games that I'm missing right now.
It's been a minute since we've heard from NetherRealm. They're probably
what we need now. Like, I mean, we had Sony buying EVO last year, and we were all kind of like, what are they going to do with it? And I think what it seems clear that they're doing is they're making PlayStation the fighting game platform, right? I mean, I think other than Smash Brothers, the whole EVO scene is now very, very focused on PlayStation.
Right.
And like I said, all we need now is NetherRealm to say, hey, we're doing another Mortal Kombat, and like every big game is
or
on
Injustice.
Its way.
Injustice 3 is also on the docket, you know, and that's a very big, very popular one for NetherRealms. So.
Yeah. Well, we have tons more State of Play to talk about. When we come back, John's going to give us that full history of Tekken, starting from the first game. But yeah, we have lots more State of Play to talk about, so we're going to go to a quick break, but we'll be right back.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married, Let's Hear Them Talk About It. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cybercriminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Welcome back to the post show for the State of Play. We weren't sure if we were going to get multiple segments out of the State of Play, but There was a lot of good stuff. Mm-hmm. So let's kick it over to PSVR 2. We saw a game called Demio and Star Wars Tales from Galaxy's Edge, which is already exists for the Meta Quest. Mm-hmm. But let's start with Star Wars. What do you think?
I mean, this is a game that, like you just said, it's on Quest 2 already. It's sort of like a, I don't want to call it just like a big advertisement for their theme park.
Right.
It's sort of tied in there, but it's deeper than that. But here I think they said it's like an enhanced version.
Yeah.
And it definitely looks better. Like we're getting to the point now where there's a running theme with PSVR 2 stuff, and that it looks very, very good. Like,
well, I mean, you're seeing like volumetric lighting, you're mm-hmm. seeing particles in the air, things that we don't normally see in VR games.
Right.
Which we kind of get a glimpse of just how powerful the PSVR 2 actually is. Like some of the gameplay looks kind of like we expect from a VR game.
Right.
But then there are these moments where I think when it's not doing these shooty sections, I think when it's more the environmental and the conversational stuff, it's bringing these. I mean, look, C-3PO, there's like, you know, like it looks like ray tracing on him. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, there's effects that we're not used to seeing in VR games.
Right.
I was actually really surprised how much better than the Quest version this looks.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
And the thing with PSVR is like, PSVR 2, is it looks great, right? You're going to see some awesome looking VR games, but like, a big plus is that it's got haptic feeling in the headset, which mm-hmm. you can just kind of like look at this trailer and know where those are going to kind of hit. You're going to feel like weird vibrations and stuff like that. And it's also using the adaptive trigger technology right. that's in the DualSense. So yeah, Jada, what about like PSVR?
Yeah. I mean, I've been a proponent for PSVR for a while. I don't know if this one's going to be one for me personally. I like Star Wars, but I don't know if I want to dive back into this game just for an upgraded version. Mm-hmm. I'm more looking for that new experience that PSVR 2 is going to bring to us. So, it looks great. And I think a lot of Star Wars fans are gonna be happy with this one, but I don't know if this one's for me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a giant Star Wars fan. So this, I love shooting Minox no matter where I can do it. So I'm into this no matter what, but, I think this is more to like kind of build out the library mm-hmm. between the first party stuff. What's interesting though, is that like, we keep seeing PSVR 2 games and there's still all those questions around the system itself. We don't know release date. No. We don't know price. We don't know backwards compatibility. Like all of those are going to be very, very important to how quickly early adopters want to jump into it. If it's like, I mean, they just raised the price on PS5. So what? Right. I mean, what are we predicting? $550 for PSVR 2?
We've had a long running tally. I think PSVR launched at $250 or $300.
I think $300? It was
$299.
Yeah. Okay. And you know, that was pretty expensive. And you think that this thing, I was like, okay, it has to be like $400. And mm-hmm. then it's like the more they show, I'm like, it's probably going to be $500.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to be impossible to find.
The Quest just went up $100 as well.
That's
so
right.
The technology is getting more expensive just because of you know what's happening with the components.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, it's going to be about how it feels when you're wearing it. Like my big objection was it was all those cables coming out the back into a box that then didn't sit very well mm-hmm. next year. Like
right.
none of it sat in a comfortable way.
You move an inch and that box would go flying.
And you know, I mean like the other devices were not great. The original Oculus setup wasn't great. And then the Vive was a real pain in the ass because you mm-hmm. had to have the cameras around. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think we've moved a long way away from that. But what I'm hoping is that it's like, you know, one thin cord coming out of the thing at most. Because if it's another like big batch of cables,
No. We know for sure it's
already announced.
Yeah, there's only one snake this time, not like 16 snakes like the ones before. We don't know if like you can plug it into your PC and use it as like PC VR though. But you mentioned like actually wearing it and feeling it, and you were talking about like the DualSense and haptic features and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That's going to be such a big selling point, and it's going to be one of those ones you won't really know is great until you try it yourself. Like VR always had that kind of uphill battle. I feel like now there's more people have tried VR. It's more of a sort of like understood quantifiable thing for people. It's less like I have to go to Best Buy and try this thing on,
mm-hmm.
and put this hat on during a pandemic.
Get this all the thing germs that's touched face. Other people's faces.
Yeah, all day long.
Try that. Yep.
So, but this like once you start playing a game and you feel the controllers and you feel like and there's 3D sound and stuff like that, I think that's going to be like one of those things where you go, oh man, I gotta buy this, damn it.
It's like when you play a game, the game's goal is to always kind of like get you immersed, right? But at the end of the day, you have a controller in your hand and you're, you know, looking at a TV, right? If you do a headset, that gives you a little bit more immersion. But like VR, the whole point is immersion, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So everything that they can do to kind of like make you forget about the real world and make you feel like you're in a video game, I'm super, super down for that. We got a few more kind of cool looking games. Stellar Blade, which was originally Project Eve, kind of looked like a little like mech Dark Souls-y kind of looking game. Jade, what'd you think?
Yeah, I loved it. Very action centric, very kind of DMC, fast paced. I feel like I'm repeating myself with a lot of games that are coming that we got to see today. But I really liked the look of this one. I think it showed itself off very well. I think we got a look at Project Eve in a state of play or a showcase in the past. So I'm very excited to see that this one got an update and it's still continuing and looking great and even better than it did the first time. Because first time I know it fell a little flat.
I love when a game is like, I love when, you know, we saw with Project Octopath where it's like, this is our code name, and then they're like, okay, this is the actual name.
Yeah,
this one's like wildly different. But Brian, you're a Dark Souls fan.
I got a little annoyed at the beginning when they showed this first person view of the inside of a ship, because I was let me out of the ship and let me stab people. Like, I don't want to fly around and look inside of the cockpit all the time. But in terms of like Souls games that are Souls likes that are like out now or coming out soon, we just got Steel Rising and we're getting Lies of P, and both of those are like kind of steampunk ish or very steampunk ish or steampunk adjacent, and this is more used future dystopian robot stuff torn apart. I'm way more into that rather than like, you know, creepy clocks come to life and talk hats. Like, no disrespect to the art styles in those games.
They Steel Rising really is cool. Like mannequins came up.
You don't need nightmares from when you go to visit your grandparents, right?
Outside of the regular ones you get for doing that. But yeah, I love the monsters in this game. I love the combat, looks super fun. Looks tough as hell. I love like getting my butt kicked in video games, coming back and killing the creature that killed me. So it's also like, look at the just how dynamic the character moves here, like the backflips and stuff like that.
It's just the environment. I mean, like, this is another one where it's like, okay, this feels, you know, like a next gen game. There's a lot going on to kind of set the tone, and there's a lot of, you know, debris and particles and the cool lighting and, you know, and it's got a look, right?
It sets itself apart.
Yeah, it feels very consistent with itself, you know? Like, I think a lot of games are very derivative right now. They're all trying to do the From Software thing, or they're trying to do, and this feels like it's like, okay, we have a vibe that we're going for. And I love the creepy old cyborg guy.
I know. Like, what was it? The Surge, those games. Brought in sort of like the mech stuff a little bit and a little bit of the used future stuff. But it obviously was like a slower paced, kind of heavier games. Mm-hmm. And this just looks like you're doing backflips and stabbing people. And like, I'm into it.
And then finally, what about Pacific Drive? I was trying to get a grasp on like what that is. It's like the studios. It's Ironwood. I believe it's our first game.
Debut game.
We thought it was like a Ghostbusters
we
game.
We all had wildly different ideas. I think John said it was.
I thought maybe this is what the No Man's Sky team are doing next. It's like a sort of more down to earth looking thing.
I do love that like guessing game, meta game to every showcase, State of Play, Nintendo Direct, all those fun things. You're sitting there like, is this Ghostbusters? No, this is Laser Shoot Larry.
This game has like an odd look, because part of it's beautiful, right? But then some of it is like, Look at the way that car looks, and it's sort of almost kind of a low poly kind of like, but with like a very high res texture over it. There's like a distinct look. Like it to me, you know, what was going through my head was, are they doing like a Kentucky Route Zero, but like super high fidelity, or like what is this?
Oh, because even called out.
I thought it was like a Quantic Dream type game, like a next Beyond Two Souls, something along those lines. Like, it gave me those vibes right off the bat. So I'm intrigued to see what this ends up being, because like, we honestly have no clue.
I also like that the janky old station wagon has kind of like pseudo kit stuff inside of it.
The station wagon like grows parts or gains them somehow. But yeah, John, I was with you. I was like, this feels like a little Firewatchy for a minute it just felt like, you know, it looked like Wreck-It Ralph's hands or whatever for a second. And then it just starts building up. But even like the gunk effects and stuff on the dashboard, it's kind of cartoony. Like, I'm really into this art style. It took me a minute to kind of figure out what it was. I still don't. Like, I mean, my guess right now is this is a, no pun intended, narrative driven first person car game where you drive across the, you know, along the Pacific narratively. This is me, like, Moby Dick is about a dick named Moby. You're just driving your car and like crazy stuff happens, and like, I don't know, that could be really cool. It doesn't seem like there's a racing component or a multiplayer component. It just seems like there's a start and end here.
I do love that like Firewatch line comparison, because that game, it did, like, it was kind of had that like Wreck-It Ralph kind of, but it's also like insanely serious.
Yeah, and,
like,
I
do want more of those for sure.
I like the Ironwood logo too. It reminds me of like Weyland Yutani from Alien.
Let's talk about what wasn't there, because that's always, you know, there's always, we always have our hopes and dreams. Everybody shoots for the sky, and then it doesn't happen.
Right.
Can I start?
Not, what's that?
Can I start?
Oh, please.
Jade has
I mean, I've got chat open, and I've been looking at chat, and everybody's screaming for Spider-Man. Spider-Man 2 is what everybody was hoping was going to get shown today. We knew it was going to be mostly Japanese partners, is what they said on their website for it, so I didn't have my hopes up for that one. Mm-hmm. But obviously, chat is hungry for Spider-Man, so I just definitely wanted to make sure I acknowledge everybody in the chat. I see you guys out there. Whether you guys are enjoying this, our podcast, or not, you're here. So just, you know. Enjoy it.
I'm playing Spider-Man on Steam Deck right now. Ooh, glorious.
What
mods do you have? Are you running?
I'm not running any mods.
No?
No, I don't want to be Better Call Saul. No disrespect to the modders out there. I just want regular ass Spider-Man with his cool animated costume. I know, not a Japanese company, but I wanted something from Sucker Punch at some point. I want to know what they're working on next. I want to see their like definitive next-gen game, whatever they're doing after Ghost of Tsushima. Yeah. We haven't seen that yet.
Yeah.
I'm going to just piggyback back off of Jada's, you know, Wolverine. Wolverine is such a mystery right now. We've only gotten like a minute long kind of teaser. We don't know anything about what that game looks like, how far in development it is. That was something I was really, really hoping to see. I'm very good at keeping my expectations in check, and they're very good at being like, this is what you're going to see.
Mark, there are three games right now that are teaser trailer pan and scans of like either a desk or like a bar that we've just picked apart for Easter eggs. It's Amy Hennig's game, it's Wolverine, and the Indiana Jones game. And I think it's like the new way of like, just be like, here's a messy desk, you guys sort it out. Look over that for a few years. I'm like, show me Wolverine.
John, what about you?
So, I mean, outside of the fact that we knew it was going to be primarily Japanese, I thought if this is the last one of this year, I thought we might get a... There are a number of things that are sort of happening in the background around Sony properties, right? Like, we know that the Twisted Metal TV show just finished filming and it's coming out next year. I was hoping maybe an acknowledgement that we're bringing this franchise back in some way. Right. The one that I kind of... And it's weird, because I didn't particularly love it at the time, but I have a fondness for it in hindsight, and that's Siphon Filter, because I feel like there's a massive gap for that kind of stealthy spy.
Right.
Like, we haven't had a Splinter Cell in God knows how long. We haven't had a Metal Gear in God knows how long. Like, Siphon Filter was Sony's attempt at that. They did actually some really interesting games on the PSP and the Vita as well with that franchise, and then it just ended. Like, it was PS3, right? And then they just haven't touched it since. And it feels like a franchise that is a type of game that the order, even if they just said, hey, we're rebooting this franchise, and it was a logo, or it was
And we know that Days Gone 2 isn't happening. So you do have this like first party studio that it's like, okay, you used to make Siphon Filter. We want more Siphon Filter. And we know that you're not working on Days Gone 2. You know, lastly, I'll say Team Asobi. That kind of fits in with what they were, you know, the theme of this showcase. We have no idea what they're working on. They said it's a big game.
It's Astro's Playhouse.
They'll be there day one on the PSVR 2 launch.
Yeah,
that's I guarantee.
Hope so. Because that's like a Astro's Playroom is so good.
Yeah, no, they're there to show off all the new toys and bells and whistles with new hardware. And I love them for that.
Well, the State of Play was not the only big showcase we got over the weekend. We got the Ubisoft forward. So we're done with the State of Play. I don't want to hear another word about it.
All right.
We're moving to Ubisoft after the break. We'll be right back.
Swerved on him.
Welcome back to Podcast Beyond. Did I say welcome? I don't know what I said.
No, you know it.
Podcast Beyond, we're back, and we're talking about the Ubisoft forward.
That is what the show is called.
Thank you. It happened on Saturday, and it was Assassin's Creed centric.
Yes.
Yes.
There was an hour of Ubisoft being like, here's our portfolio and all of our stuff, and then it was just like, here's Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, it kind of became they went from their normal stage to this like other room, and it was kind of a conference within a conference itself, which kind of like paints this picture that Ubisoft is all in on Assassin's Creed right now. Yeah. You know, they own a lot of really big properties, Watch Dogs and Ghost Recon and
Far Cry,
but it's like you could tell Assassin's Creed is their bread and butter. So much so that they announced four games, a DLC.
Five games.
Four? What was the fifth game?
The fifth one is a Netflix exclusive tie-in to their live action show that doesn't have a title or really anything about it. But I have a feeling it's going to be like some Game Loft style 2D platformer. So,
You can
put that in your back pocket. You'll play it with your Roku remote in 2026. Don't worry about it right now.
Hey, if they take it back to like side-scrolling Prince of Persia days, sure. I'm down for that.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with the only one that's coming this year, which is the Assassin's Creed Valhalla final DLC. It's called The Last Chapter, and it's basically closing out Eivor's story. And during the break, I was desperate. I was like, who's our Valhalla guy? It's
me.
Sean.
It's me.
Right.
So Valhalla sort of by accident became my comfort game. Like, and you know, a lot of what Ubisoft was talking about was making Assassin's Creed a platform. And I feel like Valhalla was actually the tryout for that, in that, you know, it did its sort of mainline Assassin's Creed sort of like leveling up in a particular environment, and then it had the futuristic stuff, and then it had the sort of present day links to it, and then it also started, it went off in this sort of wild tangent with the Viking god stuff, when you got, you know, the sort of Asgardian part of it as well, which they've blown out in DLC as well. So I put about 120-ish hours Valhalla.
Nice work.
Because when I can't think of what to play, I'll put it on, and I'm at the point now where I'm so badass. I'm like, nothing's that hard.
Right.
You know,
right?
Yeah. But it's like, oh, I'll do a raid, and I'll go and get some stuff, and I'll go, and I still don't have all of this armor set. So, because some of the environmental puzzles are, you know, you've got to work out how to get into this tomb, which has underwater, and it reminds me of how you had to think about Tomb Raider when it was still a puzzle game.
Back PS1.
Where it's kind of like, I know this thing is over there and it's behind a locked door. There's got to be a way in there. And it's not just pulling, it's like finding the right route or draining water out of something. And I really enjoy that. It's almost sort of like passive for me. So I'm actually a little sad that they're ending it, because it feels like, much like, so the last one I really had this strong feelings about was Black Flag, where you get so attached to the characters and their, you know, their personality and their, what their reactions are to things, that you kind of, you just want it to keep going.
Right.
Eivor's somebody that's just kind of always been there for you for the last 2 years.
Basically, yeah. And you know, they've told, and there's a love story in there, and there's like the whole thing with his brother, and like there are a lot of kind of like fairly deep storylines that it allows you to kind of dip in and out of in a way that the other Assassin's Creed didn't do. Like, Assassin's Creed 2 did a pretty good job of getting you attached to, that was Ezio, right? That one, so that one and Black Flag and this one are the ones that have really kind of spoken to me. So honestly, the fact that it, like I said, the fact that it's the last one, I'm kind of sad.
Sure.
I know not everyone loves this game, and I think Assassin's Creed in general gets beaten up for, hey, it's a map with 11 million things in it.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I like about it.
Sometimes you need that.
Yeah.
John, the good news is that... it's not the last Assassin's Creed game.
I know, isn't that awesome?
They've renewed the license.
They're going to keep it going for at least one more year.
Yeah.
So not only was Valhalla the last chapter the only one that's coming this year, it's also the only one we actually got to see footage of, I guess you could say. So the big standout was Assassin's Creed Mirage.
Right.
Which we got to see a like 10-minute live action trailer, which was awesome. The trailer was awesome, or, you know, the little, like, cinematic they put together didn't really tell us much about the game. We didn't get to see the game at all. We just know it exists, and it looks cool. But we do have some details. It's set in Baghdad, 20 years before the events of Assassin's Creed Valhalla. So it's,
I don't know why that prequel detail is relevant because of the way Assassin's Creed time hops.
I know. Well, that and like it takes place in Baghdad, like it completely separate areas. So it's kind of weird that they're like, this is 20 years before Valhalla. And you're like, okay.
I wonder if that
is Eivor show.
That's what I was saying. Maybe they're going to show the main character here is going to show up at the end of the Valhalla Last Chapter DLC.
Or actually. The hook here is it's basically a reimagining of Assassin's Creed 1, right?
Yeah, it's a return to like the actual assassin stuff.
Yeah.
For Assassin's Creed.
Parkour and assassination.
Yes. I should have looked this up, but is it 20 years since Assassin's Creed 1 came out? It must be close to that, right?
I think it's 15.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It was
2005, 2006.
So yeah, I mean, it could be that where they're going back in order to show that the characters cross over in some way. I think that would be relevant. Mm-hmm. But I think what's interesting is that they're leaning into the parkour and the assassination. Like, one thing Valhalla did not really do, there was assassination goals, but you, like I said, you get to the point where you're so badass that, you know, some dude in black armor shows up on a horse and you're like, all right, come at me. And then a couple of swings and you've taken his head off.
Yeah, you're going to sneak up on him.
Whereas what the original was great at was that, you know, you were sneaking over rooftops and finding out how to get a drop on them. And it was all about that one hit kill. Or I loved in the earlier ones where, remember when you could sneak up behind and you could do both blades at two people at once?
Yeah.
I've kind of walked away from that stuff.
I loved all the stuff where, like, you'd creep around a whole castle and you'd jump off the roof and you'd kill some corrupt pope and then you'd hold him in your hands and everything would get dark and he'd be like, oh, why did you kill me? That sucks so bad.
Well, that's still, like, in Valhalla. They've kept that tradition.
But it's not sneaky.
No. I think the rush for me when the originals was after getting that kill was the music and then getting out.
They've yet to replicate that feeling. I feel like I love Assassin's Creed, but that you kill him, you do your little bit of a talk, you get your feather, you get the blood, and then it's like, no, you know, and then you're just like running because the entire town's after you.
50 guys after you, right?
Well, it sort of reminds me about how like the Resident Evil timeline split into like first person shooters and action games and stuff like that, and then the third person stuff. And like we're getting Resident Evil 4, we got Resident Evil 2 and 3 remake, but we also got Resident Evil Village. So like it's almost like all of those fans are kind of satiated at the same time. Obviously, the people who still want tank controls and fixed camera angles, we left you behind in the 90s. I'm sorry, no offense. I miss those days too. But where this is going now, I think it's really smart because they're making this, which services fans of like the old school Assassin's Creed games. But then they're also doing like the follow-up to Valhalla, which is Assassin's Creed Red, I believe.
Is Red or Jade the
Jade. Red.
Jade. Red. Wait, no, none of those have anything to do with Valhalla.
I mean in terms of like being a big open world game.
Right.
Well,
we go into that. I know exactly what you're saying though. When Origins came out, Assassin's Creed transitioned from, you know, Assassin's Creed 1 through Syndicate, it became a Witcher game, essentially. Right, yeah. They became Witcher-like, say, RPG and, you know, huge open-world things, where Mirage seems to be taking that back. But then we got Assassin's Creed Infinity, which we're not exactly sure what it is.
Like a platform? They talked about this, what, 2-3 years ago? Yeah. They made it sound like, hey, you know, we've been doing all this thing, and they have the, what's the thing, Animus? Whatever.
Yes. Yep. Yes,
at the center of it all. The original pitch for it, it made it sound to me like, okay, we're building the Animus and you're going to be able to launch all of these like old heroes out of it, and it's this central clearinghouse. Now it sounds like Battle.net for Assassin's Creed, where it's a launcher,
right?
I think.
Yeah.
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 But they also, there was a quote, they spilled out a couple of quotes the other day after their whole thing. First of all, this is Assassin's Creed Hex, the Salem Witch Trials one. And
I mean, honestly, I've never been that excited for a logo, but this looks awesome.
It's so, like, I'm a huge horror fan, so taking that and putting it in Assassin's Creed, very, very cool. But they said something about sort of like taking the Animus stuff and the Desmond stuff from here on out and kind of putting it in the margins and putting it outside of the mainline game, so you maybe won't be bogged down with like him walking around Facebook looking for a computer to sit down and talk to his uncle's
memories or whatever. Barely touched that.
I know.
There was like, you go to the little like wobbly flickery things and then you turn into the girl in the future and then she jumps up the lighted staircase and gets the thing.
Yeah.
And that was literally it. And then there's the scene in America and that's it.
Yeah. So yeah, they said they were gonna like take that stuff and I think that stuff's gonna be in their hub, their launcher, basically.
Right.
But they also mentioned they want to make more like shorter, more focused games. Mm-hmm. I, like sorry for you, John, but like the next one might not be 140 hours. Really
disappointing. Yeah, I think Mirage is going to be a little smaller, but then as you mentioned, Assassin's Creed Red, codename Red, takes place in feudal Japan. This is going to be
what people have been asking for years, right? Which is to take it here. But, you know, the fact that they're taking all the lore out that way reminds me of what Bungie did with Destiny, right? Where in the original Destiny, they were like, yeah, all the lore is like written on the back of these things, and like, we're not really going
to
bother you with
it. You would get like a card that you then had to go to the website to
like,
read the lore.
If you really care that much, you can go look over here. And I think, but what's interesting is that the audience didn't seem to like that. Mm-hmm. So it's odd that Yubi is like kind of going back to that and being like, we're not going to gum up your game with all this lore stuff.
I think
stuff.
With the Desmond stuff, it kind of became like this running joke of like, who actually likes this? And then there's always a couple of people who are like, me.
But it didn't really go anywhere. There was no payoff, right? Because it was only scratching the surface of a larger story.
Yeah, it never got deep enough to actually have meaningful impact to the story in one game. And it just kind of broke up the action. It's like, I just did this really cool thing. I'm ready to go do this next area and do this. It's like, I got to go do this Desmond part out of the Animus. Like,
it's like the Mary Jane stuff in Spider-Man.
Oh, my gosh.
I want to swing. I don't want to hide behind a desk.
And, like, games need those moments to breathe after a big moment and stuff like that. But it just needs to be put in the game in the right spot, in the right locations at the right timing. If you have it in there too much, you're going to lose players' attention. They may bounce off the game. If you have it in there not enough, you don't give enough story. It's really hard to hit that perfect middle ground for it. So hopefully they can do it with the next couple ones, but we'll see how that works with the Infinity. I don't know. There's so many. I've lost track of them. Infinity is the hub thing, right?
The next few games are going to be $70. No, Infinity is the hub.
The hub with all
launcher.
The lore and stuff.
Mirage
is
next. I believe Hex and Jade and Red. And
Jade is not part of Infinity,
right?
It's like a mobile game, which I'm like, I don't know how excited I am for a mobile game. Assassin's Creed, like, Assassin's Creed itself has kind of been everywhere, but like when I read the notes on it, and it's like built from the ground up to work with touch controls, and I'm like,
well, I mean, I think they're going with, I mean, they've seen what's happened with Apex and with Fortnite, and like, if you want a game with a 300 million install base, you got to go to phones, right? And I think, you know, they also showed Rainbow Six Siege on mobile, which we can talk about in a minute. Like, if you want a gigantic audience, that's the way to go, right? I mean, like, all the biggest games in the world, PUBG, right? 350 million players,
Fortnite?
Whatever it is.
I don't know. If they allow controller support, then I'm like, I'm super down. But
Buy a backbone, dude.
I know.
Yeah, seriously. get a backbone, dude.
Oh, no, I have one. I have one, and I really, really like it.
You guys don't realize this one you're going to have to play in horizontal mode, or vertical. No. You're going to have to play it vertical.
Miyamoto's going to come out, and he's like, you can play it with one hand.
I hope not. I will say, I was like, not necessarily fatigued on the Assassin's Creed stuff, but a little apathetic, and now I'm recharged a little bit. There's like some cool stuff up in looking forward to there.
No, I totally agree. We are almost out of time. We have one more segment left, but we also have one more break left. So we're going to do that, and we will be right back. Welcome back to Podcast Beyond. We're almost out of time, but something that I've noticed from the Ubisoft and from the State of Play is that we've kind of got our fall 2022 roadmap, right? And it's not insane.
It's Call of Duty and God of War.
Right, exactly.
Isn't Forspoken coming out?
Nope.
No, it is. That's next year. Right. I personally get Star Ocean, so I'm looking forward to Star Ocean, but that's October.
And we have Skull and Bones.
Gotham Knights. There's a couple.
We have Gotham Knights. Yeah. We have Harvestella, which I'm personally very excited for. It was a demo today, so I'm very excited for that. Skull and Bones. We have 24 hours to play all of Skull and Bones because God of War Ragnarok's the next day.
Right.
So we have to burn through.
We have an all-nighter that night.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be a fun night on the ship.
What you're saying is that, like, we're in, you know, almost mid-September now. Nobody has snuck in any, oh, by the way, here's a surprise game you'll be playing.
No,
this November.
Like, I think
we're good.
I think we have the roadmap, which is kind of like, Brian, you've been in the industry a long time. John, Jada, I've been here 7 years. The whole trend has always been, with my time at IGN, has been like, fall is the busy time.
Yeah.
It's not this year. It's not. March is the busy time.
And last year we saw a bit of this, right? Yeah. Where we were starting to hear, hey, the pandemic has changed how we make video games, and it's taking a little longer.
Yeah.
And, you know, on the business side, a lot of these companies, their financial year is actually March, where is the end of the year, and we're seeing the stuff getting pushed and as close to that threshold of the end of March, mm-hmm. but it's all come to a head this year, yeah. where there are so many games in Q1. Mm-hmm. Like...
A terrifying amount.
Like old, like, remember when November would have like 30 games come out?
Yeah.
I mean, like, next year, between January and March, it's starting to feel like, you know, like 20 odd years ago, I ran AGM, and like November was just like, we just didn't sleep. You know? And it was like, it was so many games would come out across all these platforms. And I think just PlayStation alone in Q1, there's a ton.
Yeah, we would call it like Christmas 2, basically. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, that holiday season already happened. The fall games already happened. And then you roll into spring. Like this year, we kicked things off with like Elden Ring.
Right.
You know?
Yep. And Horizon.
And Horizon.
Yeah. Yeah. We were like a few months into the year, and I was like, I know my game of the year, and I'm going to put 100-something hours into it, you know?
Well, and then there's just been like I thought that this spring was insane, right? Because like, you even had stuff like Tiny Tina, and like I forgot that game existed because like there was, it got sandwiched into so many games because, like you said, a lot of fiscal years end in March, so sometimes things kind of just get put out there. But yeah, I think this year's spring is nothing compared to next year's spring. So we have a list here. I when I read this number, I couldn't believe it.
Are you going to read all of them?
No.
You should do it in
speed
a voice.
Read. Speed read.
Can you do accents?
I do not. I for one, not in front of all of
send
you.
Send me the list, Mark, and I'll do a different voice for each one.
Do it in a Scottish accent, please.
56 games got delayed this year, which I think is a record. Not delayed out of the year, but 56 games
when
have just
were
been
originally
delayed.
Going to come
right.
out.
Right, right.
But we're going to focus on PlayStation games that got delayed from 2020 that we were supposed to be playing this fall and are now going to be playing next year. Suicide Squad. We were hyped to play that.
But did we ever really think that Gotham Knights and Suicide Squad were going to come out at the same time?
No.
I think that was kind of a bit of a misdirect from the beginning.
Right. Well, and they finally have shown a little bit more of that game, but I remember around the time of the delay, I think they hadn't really shown the big gameplay trailer yet. So it was still just like CGI stuff. And I'm like, they're like, it's delayed. And I'm like, yeah. We know.
Yeah.
The next one is like, I firmly believe is like a marketing thing. Forspoken. First, it got delayed from May to October.
I could not give less of a crap about this game.
I had no interest whatsoever in this game when it first got shown off. It was very limited. But the last two gameplay trailers and sessions that they've shown off, I am all in on the Forspoken train.
Mm-hmm.
It looks fantastic. The gameplay looks so fast. It's got you can check out our preview that Destin did, but it has like a DMC like combo grading skill in there. There's tons of magic. Like the magic, it feels to me what Final Fantasy XV's magic wanted to be, but done better.
Right.
And so I'm so excited for this because I love mages. I love magic in my games.
I hope you're right.
AJ to
I hope you're right.
I am all in. You can quote me on that, internet. Forspoken is going to be better than everybody expects.
I feel like there's like a little bit of an identity crisis here because there's like...
Oh, the marketing has been terrible.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think we all agree on that. But like the idea of like this is a New Yorker that gets powers and then a surfboard. And there's like a Final Fantasy element and there's dragons and you're just kind of like, what is this? Where are we? Like, this is a fusion restaurant that has stacked like one too many things on top of each other.
Brian,
and you're like, okay.
Brian, you know, all game design is they have a dartboard and they just throw darts and there's different things. And like, that's going in the game. It's like the Gremlins 2 movie.
She lives in New York and dragons.
Yeah. All right. How are we going to do that?
How do we do that? That's not my problem.
New York is easily the surfing capital of America, obviously.
But this one was weird because it was supposed to come out in October, got delayed till January. And I remember their messaging behind it was like, we talked to partners and we moved it, and they basically said the game is done, so it seemed kind of markety.
Right. Yeah, because like it was looking like Q4 was so crowded they weren't going to be able to cut through.
Well, so what's funny about it is Hogwarts Legacy has a marketing deal with PlayStation, and it's like they both got delayed out of October, and now Hogwarts Legacy is in February, so you're kind of like, is Forspoken just going to get delayed again?
Right.
I don't think so. But my initial thought was, okay, between Call of Duty's marketing deal and Hogwarts Legacy, they're moving Forspoken, and then Hogwarts got delayed. So I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. I don't know why they delayed Forspoken then. But yeah, Hogwarts Legacy, it is what it is. One very close to my heart.
That was a deep apathy for Hogwarts Legacy there.
I can't get excited. I'm watching the gameplay and I'm like, again, I'm not a Harry Potter fan. I'm just not. But also, then when I watch the gameplay and I'm like, I don't understand what this game is.
Also, are you telling me that the spells and the magic in Harry Potter look any better than Forspoken's magic? If we're comparing the magic between the two, Forspoken wins hands down.
Well, that's my thing. I've never cared about Harry Potter once or anything adjacent to it. My brain shuts off the second any of that shows up. See, my brain just shut off. And this is just like, okay, so you made a video game about like going around castles and doing spells and stuff like that. Yeah. Cool. First one of those that we've ever seen. Great. Mm-hmm. Like if I want to play a game where you can do that, I'll play 100 other video games that are based on, I don't know, worlds and IPs that I care about.
Go play Dragon Age.
Yeah.
Well, to satiate the producers in my ear and Brian Altano, who's about to leap over this desk. No. He's like, I have a child at home.
I got the Platinum and Bloodborne and I can die happy. That's all I needed.
Nice.
But yeah, that's our post show. That's our episode of Beyond this week. John, Jada, I was about to sing a song. Brian, we got Dan, we got Jober working in the back. Thank you guys so much for watching. We will be back next week with more PlayStation stuff. I don't know, I haven't planned the show yet, but we will be back. But until then, Beyond.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics, and sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.